are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, February 5th, 2018. My name is Michael Brooks, and I'm Michael Monday, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. Majority Report! We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Alona Minkowski, host at Salon.com. We're talking about the Nothing Burger Nunez memo, the very much very full burger that is the national security state, how it violates all of our civil liberties, and why no one seems to take it seriously. Not the hashtag resistance, certainly not the Trump administration, which is empowering it when it's not building conspiracy theories about it. All that and more with Alona Minkowski. Plus, the United States is ratcheting up its nuclear arsenal. They are back in the game in a big way. President Rouhani of Iran says that they are threatening Russia. Paul Ryan has some amazing brags on Twitter about what his regressive, cruel, top-end weighted tax cuts do for normal workers. That tweet ended up deleted. And chemistry professor got his kids ready for school and then was arrested by ICE in front of them, even as a Holocaust denier is poised to claim the GOP nomination in a Republican race for Congress in Illinois. What a surprise. Chris Kobach is going to represent himself in a trial in Kansas. Is that a smart move? Trey Gowdy acknowledges that he was a lousy politician, but a good prosecutor.
Yeah, he's a bag man.
His wife doesn't like when he acknowledges that he was a mediocre bag man. And Donald Trump's response to a plea on guns. His pick for a UN migration post said that accepting Syrian refugees was foolish and delusional. And I'm only going to say this once. The Philadelphia Eagles beat the Patriots. Whatever.
All right.
Whatever. You literally can't win them all. So charity for Philadelphia. My only response to that is go on YouTube, type in Bill Burr, Philadelphia. Look at his performance about the city, and you'll realize what my response is to the Phillies winning.
Yeah,
you can all go screw yourselves.
The era of the pajama boy is over.
It's the Eagles, not the Phillies.
The Eagles. Whatever. Same difference.
Yeah, Bill Burr got one over on us before, but now you're Dunkin' Donuts or Wawa's.
That's a disturbing. What's the difference between a Baltimore accent and a Philly accent?
That's some esoteric, sociological study that has to be done on that.
Because it's definitely distinct, but super tight. I'm sorry. Yes, the Eagles beat the Pats. Whatever. I got nothing more.
On a Tom Brady fumble. Couldn't have happened in a more delicious way.
I guess his hydration plan isn't working.
Got to hold on to that ball like you held on to your son's lips on that kiss.
Ooh. Shots fired. I got nothing.
I'm a Jets fan, guys. This is sweet revenge in the worst way possible.
There's something in sports almost even, it's not as satisfying, but watching your enemy fall, particularly in a nail-biter fashion. Blowouts are never as satisfying.
I think the satisfaction lasts longer when it's someone's demise rather than your own team's success. Because then when it's your team, you think like, okay, we got to do something like halfway respectable next year.
Totally. I used to love. I'm not like I like football, but I'm more of a basketball tennis guy. But I remember a couple Super Bowls. What I would do is I would spend the first half at the gym because the gym is empty. So it's like a great time to be at the gym. And then I walk into the second half and I just be like, dude, how are the Pats doing? Are we about to win again? You freaking losers. And then we would. And that wouldn't have worked so well. I'm terrible, man. I go to Yankees games with Boshkar and root for the Yankees. I don't even have geographic loyalty. I just root for the most evil teams in sports. The teams that are most antithetical to my values.
Like you're accelerationist, but in sports.
Yeah, I'm a sports accelerationist, just not in real life because I understand the difference. Speaking of idiots, we got to play this clip of Don Jr. And we play this clip not to, look, the clip speaks for itself. It's Fox News. It's the propaganda network. It's with Jesse Waters. It's staring into a deep, dark void of immorality and stupidity when these two talk. But there's something that Don Jr., like Wyatt Coke, he inadvertently does a lot to just lay bare the crisis of our modern society and of modern capitalism. Here is Don Jr. talking about the Democrats with Jesse Waters on Fox News. Warning, it will eat some of your brain cells.
What are they going to do in the midterms? Because a lot of Democrats are going to be running in districts that it was close with Hillary and Trump. So, you know, they're going to have to try to play to the middle. Are they going to say we're against bonuses? Are they going to say we're against low unemployment? Are they going to say we're against rising paychecks and go along with Pelosi and Schumer? Or are they going to say, yeah, we recognize the economy's good. Here's how the Democratic Party can make it better.
You know, I think they're going to go with the former only because they can't help themselves at this point. I mean,
they're going to lose if they do that.
That's great. I agree. But I think the problem is rather than being reasonable and coming to the table, they force themselves further and further and further left. I mean, they're left of commie right now. And that's a real problem for them because I don't think that's where America was. I think that's the lesson they learned from the election is, wait a minute, we need to be further radical left. And I don't think that's true. I think people want some moderation in their thought. And if...
I want to say this, first of all. I am a big believer in a real universal left agenda. I do, however, agree with Junior. I don't think Americans are ready for left of commie. As heartbreaking as that is for me, I think that's I think he nailed it on this one. More broadly, this clip brings to mind a condition that we here at the Majority Report would like to warn all of you about. It's called the rich, useless moron syndrome. And it is a condition produced by trust funds, way too much affluence, and completely disproportionate platforms to someone's talent and ability. It plagues much of America. And Don Jr., as you can see there, just by watching him think and talk, is just as much a victim of it as the rest of us are. So please, do something about reinstituting the estate tax and breaking up intergenerational wealth. Because if we don't, we will continue to be all harmed and threatened by that level of stupidity. Have you guys heard about Movement? You know, there were two college dropouts that started their own watch company. And it really is. It's impressive. It's crazy how fast the company has grown. Now with almost 2 million watches sold in 160-plus countries, they continue to revolutionize fashion in the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. They have even doubled their number of watch styles and are now selling high-quality sunglasses and women's bracelets. And if you thought gift-giving was all over for Christmas after Christmas, but now Valentine's Day is coming up, and our friends at Movement have put together the perfect interactive guide to make Valentine's shopping simple, shopping painless. Whether you're shopping for him or her, find everything from watches to fashion-forward bracelets and sunglasses in Movement's limited edition gift box, all curated by Movement's in-house stylists with their trendiest pieces that your special someone will love. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/majority. Go to mvmt.com/majority. Join the movement. Blue Apron is the leading meal delivery service in the U.S. It delivers fresh, pre-proportioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes that can be cooked in under 45 minutes right to your door. And while many people know about it, many don't know about the types of meals you eat when you cook with Blue Apron, like strip steaks with potatoes and spicy maple collard greens, a steakhouse-inspired favorite with delicious twist, chili-infused maple syrup. With incredible non-GMO ingredients and new chef-designed season recipes every week, Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. Every single Blue Apron meal I've had is absolutely delicious, and really, it makes cooking possible in a really busy life. I mean, that's really the bottom line. It makes delicious step-by-step meals for you. Blue Apron is treating Majority Report listeners to 30 off of your first order if you visit blueapron.com/majority. So check out this week's menu and get $30 off at blueapron.com/majority. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And finally, but certainly not least, did you know that the average family visits 5 websites before booking a vacation rental? You can spend less time planning your next trip and more time relaxing with tripping.com, the world's number one site for vacation rentals. Whether you're looking for a cabin to get away for winter, planning your next beach vacation in Hawaii, or that vacation in Europe where you'll live like a local, tripping.com can help you find the perfect place to stay. Vacation rentals offer flexibility, perks, and amenities that hotels don't, like multiple bedrooms, backyards, hot tubs, free Wi-Fi, and even fully stocked kitchens, so you can have a quick bite on the go or plan to cook your own meals. Great for families and large groups. With tripping.com, one search lets you filter and compare and sort over 10 million available properties on trusted sites like VRBO, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, and more. Don't wonder if you're getting the best deal. You'll save an average of 18% per night by booking your vacation with tripping.com. So don't forget, if you want to save time and money while booking the perfect vacation rental for your next trip, go to tripping.com/majority today. That's tripping.com/majority. You can spend more time planning, you can spend less time planning your next trip and more time relaxing with tripping.com, the world's number one site for vacation rentals, trusted by millions of travelers and featured by the New York Times, Travel and Leisure, Forbes, and more. Okay, everybody, we're going to take a brief break and we will be right back with Ilona Minkowski. Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Ilona Minkowski of Salon.com, where she is a host and she's a regular on the Michael Brooks Show. Ilona, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
It's my pleasure. Always good to be talking with you. So, Ilona, I want to tease apart the sort of this conversation about the left and the American sort of national security state. I'm kind of burned out on the phrase deep state in the era of Trump. Before we get to that, let's touch briefly on this Nunez memo, really from whatever angle you want to take it from. I mean, I don't think there's much there in terms of the actual memo. Obviously, people in Trump's orbit, many Republicans are attempting to use it to quash this investigation. And maybe others in this sort of quote-unquote resistance are reacting to it in a way that is maybe a bit too kind of blindly trusting of institutions like the FBI, which is probably the broader thesis of our conversation. But first, I mean, what do you think? What's your kind of general read on this memo and how it's being reacted to?
Yeah, I mean, what seems to be crystal clear about the memo is the motivation behind releasing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've seen even in the responses from Donald Trump Jr., you know, who said that it was kind of like a sweet revenge putting it out there.
that kid is really subtle. Yeah. He really knows how to keep things under wraps.
I know. The guy really shouldn't be allowed to do television. And, you know, and then Trump claiming that it completely vindicates him. It's none of that is true. You know, if anything, this memo just raises more questions than it does provide answers, because it's only a couple of pages long. And so there's a lot potentially missing, you know, from within it. And I do think, though, that it's telling, you know, that Donald Trump is so focused, and maybe Republicans who are in support of him, on someone like Carter Page rather than, you know, those who have actually been indicted, like a Paul Manafort. You know, there's no fighting back or questioning or secret memos that would show that those parts of the investigation are invalid. And, you know, so I just think that their whole argument really is kind of falling apart, and that was also shown by how many Republicans, including like Trey Gowdy, which, you know, I never wanted to compliment Trey Gowdy, considering that he, you know, ran a committee on investigating Benghazi for way, way longer than it should have existed, and wasted so much taxpayer money and, you know, and time, congressional time on doing something like that. But they also didn't back up the White House's stance that this is some memo that completely vindicates them, because it's just not true. And, you know, and even this got renewed over three times in front of the FISA court. It doesn't at all explain away the rest of the investigation. It doesn't at all prove that the broader investigation was launched because of the Steele dossier. So it just doesn't do any of that. But to get to your larger point, what I have found the most frustrating is that there are some very real policy debates that deserve to be had and that we've kind of forgotten or moved on from, unfortunately, in the last couple of years, about national security. And, you know, one of those is, of course, government surveillance. And this is what Devin Nunes and the Republicans pushing this memo have been kind of rallying against, is surveillance abuse by our intelligence agencies, which is a very real, very tangible, very
important thing. Hold on just one second. I'm sorry. Yeah, hold on just one second. I think you might have moved or something. No, you're good. You just moved somewhere, so your reception got really bad. So I don't know what you got to adjust. Oh. Maybe you just bring the phone closer to your mouth. I don't know. But you went, it sounded like you were submerged underwater, and I just want people to really clearly hear you.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, now you're great. Wherever you are is better? Right now, okay. Is a lot, like significantly better. All right, go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah. Where do I start?
You were talking, I mean, I guess you can go back to where you were talking when you were, I mean, it's fine. Just go back to, yes, they're identifying, and actually maybe we'll set the table a little bit. Okay, yes. So this memo basically doesn't address, you know, charges against Manafort. It doesn't address the kind of the Papadopoulos thing. What it does is it sort of doubles down on, you know, this sort of bizarre guy, Carter Page, is in the clear. It doubles down on that this memo, the Steele dossier, was a political hit job. The validity of the Steele dossier, one way or another, like, this investigation and whatever it is does not really hinge on that, frankly. But they've certainly zeroed in on that. And now what you're saying, and of course this is, and maybe you could talk about the reauthorization that happened with a FISA court a couple of weeks ago in light of this, but that the Republican rhetoric and the Trump team's rhetoric is that they're identifying and harnessing the rhetoric of civil liberties, the rhetoric of national security state overreach, which is very real, for their own narrow political ends. But then maybe conversely, there's people in the sort of resistance or MIC resistance or whatever you want to call it, who, you know, instead of disaggregating between the Trump team and, you know, broader issues that are legitimate, are just sort of hinging their whole case on a blind faith in institutions that, of course, have abused public trust.
Yeah, well, and it's also just frustrating because, you know, you heard the FBI warning that if this memo were to be released prior to its release, that it would do grave damage to national security. And I think we've gotten very used to, you know, this kind of hyperbolic language from law enforcement, from intelligence agencies in this entire war on terror. And so, you know, when a 3.5 or 4-page memo is actually released, it's pretty obvious, you know, at least I haven't heard a single intelligence analyst or intelligence expert argue that that did grave damage to national security. And, you know, and Democrats were very much kind of towing that same line, that this shouldn't be released for those purposes. And so then when this document is released, when it's clear that that threat or that risk that they were playing up doesn't actually apply to this document, it also discredits those arguments. Sure, there are very real national security threats that we should take seriously. But when you cry wolf about something like this, it makes people less inclined to actually believe it when the government says it. And so you have both Republicans and Democrats for, you know, political convenience using either a national security or a civil liberties argument for kind of a farcical case where neither really apply. And I just think that overall that does a lot of damage to, you know, the credibility of the government and to people's faith in institutions, which already is incredibly low at the moment. And so, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the FISA reauthorization that just happened the other week, that was for Section 702, which is intended to collect information and communications on people overseas. But what happens then inadvertently is if they're communicating with somebody in the United States, then that American citizens or American residents' communications are also swept up. And Congress had the ability to put some kind of amendment in. There were people on both sides of the aisle who tried to put up a new law that would have created more protections for Americans' information, but that got voted down. And so ultimately, you know, for six more years, FISA and this Section 702 power got reauthorized. Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, you know, some of the leadership of the Democratic Party all voted for it. And so did Devin Nunes, the guy who wrote the freaking Nunes memo. It's just, it's so obvious that everyone is full of shit that I don't, you know, and it's almost mind blowing. And that, again, to me is one of the more kind of frustrating aspects of everything that has been going on. And just one more point about that too. And the FISA reauthorization, because I interviewed some ACLU lawyers about this the other week when it was happening. You know, what happens is they essentially then just put all of that information into their system, and then other agencies like the FBI just search through it in the way that a government lawyer actually himself claimed in front of a FISA court, akin to the way that Americans use Google search.
Yeah.
You know, so that should freak you out.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know,
no, it should absolutely freak you out. And it should also be, I think, put in part of a broader conversation of the administration's war on immigrants, and even setting aside the specific abuse, and which is first and foremost with those, you know, with communities that are targeted by these policies. When you start looking at, you know, license plate info being shared across agencies as an example, and hiring private security contractors to help in that process. I mean, you look at these kind of parallel, you know, sort of massive civil liberty abuse and overreaches by government agencies, and then actually parallel sort of like business interests essentially that help carry out these sort of programs and monitoring. And then that becomes another, you know, self-licking ice cream cone and business interest in Washington. And I think, you know, just really underlie that on both sides. And this to me is not, you know, the hypocrisy thing is whatever. I'm totally, you know, hypocrisy is hypocrisy.
We're used to that. Yeah.
I mean, whatever, who cares, right? That's old news. But let's run the parallel here. On one hand, the Trump administration is building a conspiracy theory matrix that does sound like it's out of, you know, Alex Jones. It is actually, in fact, out of Alex Jones and Sean Hannity and comic books. And then on the same time, you know, or sounds like it's from a comic book. Then at the same time, and, you know, you talked about FISA, there's definitely other areas. It's giving policy-wise the national security state everything it wants, including more aggressive kinetic activity overseas with even less regard for civilian casualties in the Obama administration, which is another kind of piece that we could put into play here. And then, you know, as you said before, the sort of resistance figures who, you know, on one hand, it's like Trump is this, you know, sort of grossly reckless figure, which of course he is. We still are going to reauthorize all of these unique, massive, you know, executive powers, which were expanded under Bush and codified under Obama. So we have this double game going on, and the FISA thing was the perfect example of that, and also hilarious because Trump was, you know, following his own logic and tweeting about, oh, this is really bad, we gotta, and then clearly somebody was like, oh my God, you know, say it's been fixed on Fox, and then he was like, it's been fixed, it's great.
Yeah, that part was very confusing because I think it was within a matter of a couple of hours where he first, yep, you know, tweeted in opposition to the FISA reauthorization, and then clearly got like a call from, you know, Paul Ryan or somebody. And then
probably like Bo Deedle. Forget Paul. Yeah, probably like the snake doctor on Fox News.
I mean, ultimately, though, you know, this is, like you said, it's not surprising, but it's depressing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, considering where we were just a couple of years ago and what revelations, you know, really came out thanks to Edward Snowden, mm-hmm, and the fact that this was, at least for a very brief moment in time, a part of the national discourse and the national debate, and it was, you know, part of the public consciousness. It's unfortunate now that it's just kind of completely been swept under the rug and people have completely forgotten it again. And I, you know, I think Democrats are very much responsible for this in a way where if they had wanted to champion these issues, they could have, but they don't want to, you know, and that's ultimately what's at the root of this, is that the area where you always have bipartisan support is on areas of national security. And so, you know, there are some civil libertarians in both parties who do champion these issues, but for the most part, our politicians don't care. For the most part, unfortunately, I think the public, I don't know if it's that they don't care or, you know, there's just other stuff going on, and so you get easily distracted. But, you know, to your point too, even with like the Section 702, the companies are not only Section 702, but in general, you have so many of these large tech companies, right? Mm-hmm. Apple, Google, whoever, who are often handing over, you know, to government requests information on their users and their data. And they're not out there vocally lobbying against renewing any of these policies or laws, you know. And so I think that also just kind of shines a light on the way that industry interacts with and cooperates with the government here. And so no one has Americans' privacy rights, you know, in line, unfortunately. But at least for the meantime, we have this kind of very obvious display, but no one cares, because if you're so caught up and swept up in wanting to oppose Trump, then, you know, then these kind of other glaring abuses and like we said, hypocrisies on the part of other political leaders like Democrats, you know, are something that people are willing to let go or let slide.
That's true. And I don't, you know, I think it's hard to find a sort of broad, rigorous assessment of the Obama administration, and I hit Obama a lot from the left. I also, you know, I think obviously it's delusional to not admit that, yeah, of course I miss the guy being in office, relatively speaking, to either Trump or Bush. I think that's pretty obvious, mm-hmm, to almost anybody. But at the same time, I do wonder, I mean, you know, when Bush was doing this stuff, and we were first, and, you know, becoming aware of this stuff during Bush, it was terrifying, because partially, you know, because you associate it with like, this is an administration that will lie about intelligence findings to facilitate an invasion. This is an administration that's playing with, you know, that's engaging in torture and rendition. So, of course, if they're kind of aggressively violating people's civil liberties, that kind of fits with a whole pattern that's very disturbing. And then it wasn't just, you know, I think that it was like that Obama policy-wise obviously codified and continued many of these Bush administration programs and was not in any way, you know, was not protective of our civil liberties, just to put it simply. But maybe, mm-hmm, the real damage was this culture change, where it does seem, and I think partially you're right, there's just so much that people are overwhelmed by, including, you know, it's like, look, hey, maybe the FBI is violating my privacy in some indirect way. But if you're worrying about, you know, housing, healthcare, job, I mean, obviously those things are extremely immediate. But I do think that there was also, and this is where you're probably right, we have to focus on Democrats and Obama in particular, because the culture change of saying like, hey, this is a big deal that the NSA has all this data and there's no real governance model, or this is a real big deal that there's an obscure court that pretty much almost always sides, you know, with government requests, and that people are tracking this, these are kind of just reams of data. It was the sort of it was the Obama brand that I think made it safer, quote unquote, safer in a lot of people's minds. And Trump, even Trump has not changed that, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah. And, the truth is it's always been a thing too, right? Whether before it was being tough on crime, mm-hmm. Then it turned into being tough on terrorism. Now I guess we're back to, tough on MS-13 because that's where Donald Trump right, has decided right. to direct everyone's attention.
Right.
And, it's always just interesting to me the kind of cognitive dissonance that people have between what currently is happening, what we're currently willing to accept, and the way that we look at American history. And the way that people obviously welcome any kind of disclosures of CIA documents, et cetera, right, that have not been made public for years. You had all the Kennedy papers that were released last year, or, even looking at the movie like The Post, we lionize these journalists, anybody who was out there fighting against government secrecy in the past. And I don't understand why we can't apply the same thing to what we're currently going through in our current moment.
Like it might be.
And that's why I was just going to, take it back to this dumb waste of time memo debate that we're having at the moment,
right.
Because that's what I really do think it is. It's a waste of time and a big distraction.
Yes.
Now you have the Democrats that want to release their memo. And people arguing that they shouldn't do it because then that gives them more political capital. And then, it's like everything should just be out there. I'm always an advocate for the more transparency, the better, because then we can actually look at the facts and make decisions and judgments based on what we actually see in front of us instead of allowing people to spin things for political convenience.
It's a final question. I mean, do you think that partially it would help if there was more, and there's a lot of really great national security reporting. There actually is across a variety of outlets. And obviously, I mean, I look at it from a pretty left perspective, so I'm very skeptical of a lot of these, institutions' behaviors, particularly overseas, right? But I do wonder if it seems like, in spite of all the good reporting and all of the sort of work that's out there in the public imagination, there's either like cartoonish evil that might have a good instinct, but doesn't have any institutional understanding of how this stuff works and therefore can be kind of easily dismissed. And then there's been a lot of effort. And I think even you see it in popular representations like Argo or Zero Dark 30, that this is this really serious and, high-minded stuff. Like even if you're pulling people's fingernails out in Pakistan or something, it's like with a wary sigh. And that if there was maybe more just exposure to these people and these places just as normal bureaucracies and institutions, susceptible, with some of the same like positive attributes and really dangerous attributes of any other. It's just that in this case, instead of like, making a sneaker, they are dealing with all of our privacy and most basic liberties, and that there's nothing special or superhuman about these people. And I don't know like how that's conveyed to people, but it seems to me that somehow it needs to be normalized in order for there to be some type of rational conversation about it. I mean, I could be wrong, but that seems to be what's missing at some level.
I'm with you there, right? Obviously, we romanticize those aspects. There's a lot of kind of propaganda that we are, dealt with all the time, too. And, with all the utmost respect for people who serve this country, every time you want to watch a football game, you're also inundated with, military kind of rah-rah America content. And so it's everywhere. It's completely, seeped into our culture. And I don't know if there's a way to undo that. I guess the idea is that you hope that people just learn to think a little more critically, right? Because anytime people are whipped up into a kind of patriotic fervor, which people kind of fall back to patriotism as an excuse, I think, to criticize a lot of other ideas. We've seen this obviously with the Super Bowl, or sorry, not the Super Bowl, but in general with the NFL and Colin Kaepernick, kneeling in the flag.
Right.
or you're even seeing it now with this memo conversation where you have people saying that they're resigning from the FBI, or how dare, you know, Republicans in the Trump administration criticize the people who are, dedicate their lives to keeping our country safe. All of this should be up for criticism. All of these people were allowed to criticize them. You know, and I think that that's the thing that we really need to kind of hammer in, is that that is what makes this country unique. That is what our rights and I think our duty is as citizens, is to try to keep our government responsive to us and keep our government honest to us. And so, yeah, we don't need to worship these institutions. We don't need to worship the people who work for them. There are a lot of great people doing a lot of great work, but by no means does that make any of them, you know, free from this ability for critique.
I could not agree more. Hopefully some of that instinct will get revitalized somehow in the public. Ilona Minkowski, check her out, salon.com, many other places. Ilona, I always appreciate your time, and I look forward to talking with you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Okay, folks, that was Ilona. We're going to go to the fun half, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Tomorrow on the Michael Brooks Show, Felix Biederman from Chapo at Trap House is live in studio with me. We're comparing Obama impressions. We're talking about Bill Maher. A lot more stuff. I was recently indirectly attacked by one of the leading dum-dums on YouTube, so I'm going to need to respond to that tomorrow. I suppose, I don't know if I need to. I choose to respond to it. Patreon.com/TMBS, and then Michael Brooks Show on iTunes, and Michael Brooks Show on the Majority Report YouTube channel. Become a member of the Majority Report. That's how this show happens. Majority.fm/become a member. Check out justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code Majority for the Majority Report blend and other fine offerings there. Jet.com. Use that kickback link. Spread the word. Leave us a review on iTunes. Like the Facebook page. All the different ways you can link up in the iTunes description of the show. You can find all of our Twitter handles. We will see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back.